Well, folks, good evening. It's Wednesday, May 10th, and this is Barracuda After Dark following a 4-3 overtime victory over the San Diego Gulls. The San Jose Barracuda have taken a 2-1 lead in this best-of-seven series, and I need to mute my other video. There we go. Now I'm not echoing. Sorry about that, folks. Rookie mistake. Of course, I am Kevin Lacey, and I'm not normally the one who pilots this, so we're just giving it a go and make sure we don't get pulled over along the way. We'll be reviewing tonight's game three, as well as discuss some Sharks organizational info that occurred the past couple of days. And if there's any other topics that you'd like to discuss about the American Hockey League and you're watching live on YouTube, send your comments through on the Google chat and we'll go over some of them on the air. We'd also like to thank those of you listening to our audio stream on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, or Stitcher. Send us your comments and questions to @TealTownUSA on Twitter, and we'll answer those tweets on our next show. Tonight, joining me on the panel is Zach Devine. Zach, how are you? Zach, are you there?
Hey, gentlemen, how are you?
Oh, man, outstanding, outstanding. You know why I'm outstanding? Because Google brought back the lower third, baby. I don't need to do any paper stuff anymore, I know. Also joining us, a newcomer here to Tealtown, USA, please welcome Greg Manley. Greg.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Greg, where are you right now?
I am literally like 2 seconds away from home. Just wanted to get it on here. All right.
Awesome, man. Awesome. And then Zach is live from San Diego. He just left the Valley View Casino Center. Tell us about the atmosphere. Tell us about the game, Zach.
Well, it was actually surprisingly sparse. Most of the games that I've watched of the Gulls over the last couple years, the Valley View has been exceedingly full, and tonight's attendance was just a hair under 6,200. Probably a little bit to do with a relatively significant hockey game going on just up the road in Anaheim tonight. So we're probably going to see a much different crowd this coming Friday for game four.
I mean, for a Wednesday night, though, on that topic, that 6,200 on a Wednesday night just shows you what they can bring in on a weekend.
Yeah. Sorry, folks. I am trying to deal with tech. Oh, here we go. All right. I already could tell the chat was saying, get it off of Kevin. We're okay. Everyone else is here now. Anyway, but what'd you guys think about the game? I actually missed part of the first period, but I was looking at those shot totals and it looked like it was 15-3. Oh boy. Looked like they got in trouble there or 11-3. Looked like they got in trouble there in the first. What'd you guys think?
Yeah, those exact words were the thoughts that came to my mind. So when I jumped in, as they were around 11-3 or so as well, but you know, we're able to steal that one at the end of the first period. That's where that really comes through. So you know, no matter what, if you get out even with a goal out of, you know, three shots, that's definitely something you kind of hang your head up. And I think they built that momentum, you know, on the second two periods after that.
Absolutely. And Zach, Kevin LeBanc finally gets on the score sheet. He's been much maligned here in the playoffs since he was reassigned from the Sharks when the Sharks were eliminated. But Kevin LeBanc tallies after Max Jones made it 1-0. Less than a minute later, LeBanc scored. Tell us about that goal.
Well, I think LeBanc is one of those players that if he can't really get going, and I would probably put Sorensen in this camp as well, and really be the shooting threat that the Barracuda need them to be, it's going to be a much harder road for them as things get tighter. They were certainly helped out tonight as the Anaheim Ducks beat the Oilers, so that's going to keep Montour and Theodor up in the NHL. It also really makes Nick Kredilis and Sam Carrick, thank you, you know, flight risks at any moment to just, especially over the next couple days, to just shoot up I-5 into Anaheim. So
yeah,
the Barracuda have an opportunity here, but they're also getting banged up. I talked to Roy Sommer after the game. As you can expect, any head coach is going to be very tight-lipped about injuries. But I asked specifically about Jeff Pavlovs, Chartier, and Sorensen. And the response I got was, quote, "We lost a whole line."
Yeah, there was a lot of lineup, like mix, matching, doing all kinds of stuff. I could not get the lines down. I could not figure it out. But, hey, it obviously worked. The Barracuda won. But, yeah, big loss with Rourke Chartier and Marcus Sorensen both being out. And Nikita Yevpilov, obviously more of a depth guy, but still a huge player for the team. You speculated about a concussion with him. The Chartier thing, were you tipped off at all? Either of you guys tipped off about a Chartier entry from the last game? Because that one struck me odd.
He seemed fine to me. Sorensen, I saw both of those players post-game.
Okay.
There's lots of ice bags, you know, for everybody. Yeah. Lots of tape, but my best recollection is they seemed fine, but you know, who knows? There's so much going on. They could have already been nursing something and just re-aggravated it. I would probably suspect that a little bit more with Sorensen. He just hasn't quite been the same player coming back. Chartier is a big loss. He's one of if not the best, probably top three puck protector for the Barracuda. A lot of good possession skills. So that I thought he was really missed. And as you mentioned, Kevin, the line blender was certainly on puree tonight.
Yeah, that's very well said.
And they also went back to seven defenders.
Right.
So Dan Kelly drew into the lineup, who I thought played a pretty solid game for – really now being relegated to spot duty, stepped in, was a physical veteran presence. When the game was tight, Sommers put out Middleton and Kelly in the defensive zone and then would deploy Middleton and DeSimone in the offensive zone. So saw a little bit of matching there, and that's what that seven defenders allows Sommer to do.
Yeah. And Greg, I'll get back to you here in a minute, but I just want to go over the goals lineup changes too, because Sam Carrick was called up by the Ducks today, and it was like, oh, here we go. Another goal is off the lineup there. And Stu Bickle drew in, and I think Kelly did a good job neutralizing him. But then Sam Carrick got the Barkley Goodrow treatment, sent down the same day, scores a goal, gives the Gulls a 2-1 lead in the second period. And Greg, did you see that goal? What did you think? Because I thought defensively they were really out of position there. Everyone was playing perimeter, and Sam Carrick just busted right up the gut with the puck and scored.
So the fun thing with San Diego and the way they score, it's actually the same way their biggest weakness on defense is. So it's definitely a rush game. So they're really good rushing down and be able to get by your defenseman. Especially with our size of defensemen, we're not, you know, the biggest team. So they're able to get through you guys and just, you know, be able to put that shot on net. And that's where that goal kind of came up through. I also believe that it's their biggest weakness on the other side. So I think, you know, we had a huge scoring chance after that penalty kill in the beginning of overtime there that came off the rush there. So it's, you know, both sides that way. I think it's their biggest, you know, positive to the game of San Diego, but also, you know, the biggest weakness going forward.
Yeah. I didn't particularly care for how the Barracuda played in the second, which was really odd because when you look at the shot totals, Zach, 20 to 15, the Barracuda outshot the goals, and yet I felt like the goals controlled most of the second period.
I disagree with you on that one, but
oh, really? Okay, okay,
yeah, pretty substantially.
That's fine.
You know, I can see where you're coming from. You know, it definitely was able a different tempo, especially after they got that second goal in. You know, it seemed, you know, a bit tricky there because it kind of sucks. Once again, you put up 20 shots on that, and they come up with the lead after that. It's like, oh, okay. So even though it looked that way, I felt. We still had that momentum, and that's what really built into, you know, having that, you know, strength to come back at least twice in this game, if not three times.
Yeah. Well, everyone's disagreeing with me in the chat as well. So I have egg on my face right now, but apparently I was distracted by that stupid Ducks Oilers game. So, yeah. Anyway, yeah, my bad.
In the second period, I've been trying to track shots the best I can.
Oh, you've been doing a great job
during the games, and the Barracuda, for their high danger chances, outchanced San Diego in the second period 8-5.
Nice.
And then medium danger 8-7, and then even low danger 4-3. I thought the second period was just a real good back and forth game. I thought both teams had instances where they controlled play, but I just thought that was good old fashioned playoff hockey where you've got two teams that are really going for it.
Cool. So then going into the third period, I do like how the Barracuda played in that third, and Colin Blackwell gets his first goal of the playoffs on a wraparound, basically. I couldn't tell if it hit McCarthy, but they gave the goal to Blackwell, and certainly by his celebration, he must have scored that. But a nice strong play from a kid who works hard, forechecks hard, and provides a lot of energy. And those are the kinds of players you need in the playoffs. So nice to see Blackwell get that goal to tie it up. What'd you think of Colin there, Greg? Whoop, I think we may have lost Greg there for a sec.
So I think Blackwell, personally, one of my favorites out of the team. Probably the fastest kid, you know, one of the fastest in the league going forward. I think his biggest thing, though, is really – you know, putting that puck behind the net. I find himself consistently, you know, skating sometimes past the net. So him, you know, being able to put on that scoreboard, I think he was able to utilize it perfectly. So as you said, you know, that wraparound jumping through, that's exactly what he needs to do is, you know, get behind that net, put that pressure on, not just be in front of the goalie, but behind him.
Blackwell getting some, well, Greg, you're getting love too, but Blackwell getting love in the chat. Apparently he's now Crusher Blackwell, so we'll go with that. Of course, he did level Brandon Bullig in the last round. The goals regained the lead late. It was originally a Max Jones goal, but I see it's been credited to Spencer Abbott. Again, another kind of broken play. I don't know what you thought of it, Zach, but I looked at Adam Haluka just kind of throw the puck to a goals player instead of dumping it in and back the other way they go and they score. That was a killer, but thankfully O'Regan later scored. But what'd you think of the breakdown there?
You know, I think that's been an issue throughout this entire series for the Barracuda is a lot of these pucks. I don't know if players are just getting too cute or everyone's trying to make too fine of a play, but you see a lot of that. You see a lot of bank passes, just kind of prayer passes. You know, it's not really destined for anyone's stick. You're just hoping that your guy gets there. And I think that that's been an issue for the Barracuda throughout this series. And I think LeBanc and Haluka both have really been prone to it during this playoff run. And let's not forget Haluka has been a scratch. As Sommer has tried to, in my opinion, send a message because he was Haluka is a net front presence. He elevates the puck really well, and he was just getting – he was where plays went to die for a while there. And so I think that that message was sent. I think the message was a little bit lost today. It was certainly a concern throughout the game. But, you know, again, Max Jones has the speed to make, you know, to make plays like that.
Yeah.
So we have to make sure that we're giving credit to the goals. You know, the Barracuda have some quick players, but San Diego has some bona fide burners. Absolutely. On their roster, especially with Sorensen out.
Yeah, especially Max Jones, of course, a former first-round pick last year of the Ducks, making his pro debut here in the playoffs. And what happened? Something. We got someone else joining. Oh, Greg's okay. Greg's just changing his channel. Okay, cool. So Max Jones, I thought, was kind of invisible here so far in this series, but he came out big tonight, and he looked like a guy who has a huge future for the Ducks, unfortunately, for us Sharks and Barracuda fans. But not to discredit Danny O'Regan for tying the game 2 minutes later with just 1 minute and 1 second left. O'Regan, another guy like LeBanc, who we've been wanting to see more scoring out of, and Danny O'Regan knocks in, couldn't tell if it was a rebound or if the puck hit Robinson and redirected over to O'Regan, but what a huge goal with the empty net with 1:01 to go. Talk about the resiliency, Zach.
Well, this is the first win that the Barracuda have had this season down here in San Diego.
Yeah.
They were 0-5 during the regular season. They looked well on their way to seeing that mark fall down to 0-6. But, you know, this is a team that, you know, just kind of kept clawing back. They kept in it. I thought it was actually outside of the first period where even there you have to credit their resiliency, somehow escaping with a 1-1 tie. Grosnick playing well, you know, on a first period that the goals came out energized by the home crowd. I thought it was a perfect road game overall. And so seeing the resiliency of this team, as you mentioned, just every single time, you know, scrapping back, finding a way, really with, you know, the odds against them. This was only the second time the goals lost after taking a lead into the third period this season. And
wow.
San Jose was the other team to do that back in March.
Yeah. Yes. I remember that game. That game was incredible.
So, you know, this is a team that, for whatever reason, against San Diego, just doesn't, you know, feels like it has a puncher's chance, and that's good. They've stolen back home ice now, and still have two more games down here. So, really, the key is just sticking to that game plan, and you know, with a better first period after the game. Sommer mentioned that he's very displeased with the play in the first period, and that's got to improve.
Okay. All right. Greg, how do you think the Barracuda looked in overtime? Because obviously O'Regan's goal put the game into overtime, and the Barracuda kept putting up shots and getting pressure on Enroth, which is obviously what you need, even with the tired bodies. How do you think the Barracuda played there in OT?
I think I know you were talking about the second period there. I think that was their best period, was actually the overtime period. I think they put that pressure on, especially with that early penalty kill. I think they set their tone for themselves moving forward. So they wanted to really make sure that they, you know, got this. So I can, you know, fall back onto the O'Regan and even, you know, a couple of the double ups there. I think, you know, it wasn't just, you know, resiliency. I think it was a desperation thing. So, you know, going down here, I think, you know, if we fall, you know, 2-1 there, you know, you're looking for a sweep down there in San Diego, which is on the weekend, it's probably going to be a lot harder to play down there. So they wanted to make sure they won this game to start off. They wanted to make sure that they got at least that run through where, you know, even if we lose the next two down there, we can come back to San Jose where, you know, their confidence is going to be built back up, and especially behind their fan base moving forward.
Absolutely. And as Greg alluded to, the Barracuda got that winning goal in overtime, and we're going to show it for you. If you weren't able to watch it on AHL Live or at the viewing party at Stanley's, by the way, if you were at the viewing party at Stanley's, we want to hear about your experience this evening. But here's Craig Elston on the call. He's the goals color commentator, but believe it or not, he actually stayed pretty neutral on this call.
Timo Meier dragging in, down low, hit a shot and scored! A one-handed goal! A game winner for Timo Meier!
So, what a power move there by Timo Meier. Loved that. Loved it. Timo Meier, I mean, that's a guy who's been stepping up big time here in the playoffs. I mean, for both the Sharks and for the Barracuda, it's been outstanding. And, I mean, that's the guy. Talk about Max Jones being a former first-round pick. There we go. Who needs Max Jones? We got Timo Meier. What do you think, Zach?
Well, I mean, it's certainly encouraging to see the growth that he's had this spring. I posted a quick interview that I had with Timo after the game on my Twitter feed. And, speaking to him just over the course of the season, I think he's really growing into the role. Early in the season, it was just about fitting in and making sure he's playing the right way and things like that. Now, a lot of his discussion is what he needs to do to contribute and lead. And I think that taking the puck like that, having the power move, having the confidence to do that, he was an excellent player, for the Barracuda all throughout the game. He had some brain cramps, but he's a young player. But I thought that he, Robinson, and Carpenter were the Barracuda's best, and it's got to be something where that secondary scoring kicks up. Carpenter has been so huge for the Barracuda with 11 points. He's leading the AHL. And if you can get Timo, LeBanc somehow back on track, and I think Daniel Regan's been chipping in. His plus minus is a little scary, but
yeah,
if you can, Timo is leading that pack, I think, with his two-way play and the physicality that he's bringing. He's been a very impressive player, and it's been exciting to see the steps forward he's taken this spring.
Yeah, definitely. Ryan Carpenter filling in now on that line with Meyer and Robinson for Rourke Chartier. But Carpenter, I mean, that even more than Meyer, talk about a playoff performer. That's exactly what you want to see out of a guy who wears an A. I actually thought Carpenter would be the captain this season. So, and by the way, folks, for those of you watching or listening on our audio streams, check out at Zach the Bear, ZAKK the Bear, because he posts right before we got on the air, he posted a great interview with Timo Meyer following the game. So you're going to want to check that out on his Twitter. So that's Zach the Bear. Zach, do you have any other thoughts about the game before we let you go? Because I know it's late and you got to prepare for game four.
Just to echo, what Greg said a little bit, this was a key game one way or the other. The Barracuda have now stolen back, home ice. They've finally got that monkey off their back when it comes to playing in San Diego. And so I think that first period, they were a bit tight, and hopefully this allows them to loosen up a little bit and play the way that we saw during the season and really prototypical Barracuda hockey in the second and third periods. And then even in the overtime, they really took it to the goals after that first period. So I think the keys going forward is another strong start for the Barracuda. Just come out of the gates, at least swinging, maybe not connecting.
Yeah.
Or, hope to connect, but at least swing. That continued net presence. That was something that I thought was much better in this game. They had a lot of net presence. They still need to keep their sticks down a bit more. There were some juicy rebounds. Enroth was off his game, I thought, tonight. From what we saw, I'm not sure if I know the Barracuda made a point of getting in his eyes and getting traffic. Whatever they did, it worked. That needs to keep up, whether it be traffic, crashing into him, whatever that needs to happen. He looked much less comfortable in this game. So keeping Enroth uncomfortable, coming out swinging in the first period, those are going to be big keys for game four.
Definitely, definitely. So the Barracuda take a 2-1 series lead over the San Diego Gulls. I do have one question for you, Zach. Vince G brought it up. I'm pretty sure I know the answer, but I'll throw it to you. Manny Veder signed his entry-level contract with the Sharks, I believe it was yesterday. Is he eligible to play for the Barracuda here in the playoffs?
My understanding is yes, because he was a CHL player that his season has ended, much like Max Jones or Jack Kopaka for the Gulls. There's no way for them to do the paper transaction, right? They're in the CHL. They're ineligible by definition. Now that their season is concluded, they are eligible to be recalled, played, whatever, by their parent club. So Werder is a player that we could see. We, you know, I speculated that, hey, who knows? You know, he's, you know, he could have been practicing with the team, might have been an option, you know, as a fourth center, but we'll see kind of where that goes. Either way, it's good to have a healthy, skilled body in camp, especially as hopefully these injuries stop piling up for the Barracuda, but they're certainly dealing with a couple of them right now.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us tonight, Zach. We'll let you go, but we'll hear from you again this Saturday or this Friday for game four, huh?
Yep. Thanks so much. Great, Kevin. Have a great show. Thanks for having me. Always appreciate joining you guys.
Thanks, Zach. And for those of you who are just tuning in, that was Zach Devine, and I'm Kevin Lacey, joined by Greg Manley this evening. And we just discussed game three of the Pacific Division Finals in the American Hockey League. The San Jose Barracuda beat the San Diego Gulls in overtime 4-3. Timo Meier with the game-winning goal. Please subscribe if you haven't done so already, if you're new to watching the show. I did see that we've got a bunch of likes, a bunch of views. It's awesome. We love having you here. So please give Teal Town USA a subscription, because you're going to want to catch us after every Barracuda game here in the playoffs. And to the one of you who disliked our video, well, I'm sorry that the Gulls lost, but guess what? I'm not really sorry. So, Greg, let's get your final thoughts about the game before we talk about a little more AHL news and then wrap up.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess I'll just build off of it. So, you know, as I said, you know, ups and weaknesses. I know we just watched that overtime goal again. I think it just proves out a point again that, you know, they're really good on the rush moving forward and getting that offense going. So finding ways to kind of get around them is going to be tough for the next 2 days or, you know, two games going forward. But as you can see, you know, from that Timo goal, we can get behind those defensemen. And Ross, his easiest way of, you know, making saves there is when, you know, we're moving forward on him. So it looks like, you know, we keep building those rush and moving forward. It looks like we're in good shape. And then secondly, I would say, once again, it's all about, you know, that desperation that we had here. So we really wanted to make sure we at least got one game down there. If we're going to lose, we're not going to lose in that sweep down in San Diego. Yeah. Especially after, you know, I think they're going to be pulling in, you know, maybe 13,000 on Friday and maybe 14,000 to 15,000 on Saturday. So I'll be there on Saturday myself. But, yeah, I know for sure that's definitely a crowd you don't want to, you know, go down, you know, 2-1, 3-1 against.
Yeah, it sounds like we're going to have a pretty good contingent of Barracuda fans trying to get into the Valley View Casino Center this weekend as well. You're going Saturday, is that correct?
Yeah, so I'll be there on the game on Saturday. I'm going down on Friday night. So,
awesome.
You know, look for me at like SeaWorld and Saturday afternoon, and I'll be down there. So
yeah, and I believe Cheryl Ganapal, who's in the chat and watches the show. Shout out to you, Cheryl. I believe she's trying to get some friends and whatnot to go take that road trip. I think Eric Landy, who's of course from Teal Town USA After Dark, I believe he's going to go this weekend. So cheer on the Barracuda, because San Diego is a very difficult place to win a hockey game, as the season series proved, and tonight was the first one they won. And if you're unfamiliar, folks, with the AHL playoff format, it's typically a 2-3-2. So games four and game five as well will be in San Diego before the series returns to San Jose, if it even does, because we could sweep them, right? So yeah, that's going to be awesome. And Greg, well, I can't wait to hear about your story in San Diego this weekend.
Yeah. So anybody that is going down, sorry, before you jump off, I'm going forward to the next thing here. So, I know, San Diego likes to do a lot of tailgate parties. One, they're in San Diego, so the weather's always gorgeous. And they have a lot of sponsors down there. So I know, like, you know, the team runs a bunch of stuff in the parking lot beforehand. So it's not just, you know, go to the game. It's going to be, you know, a couple of hours things beforehand. So make sure you get down there early. Check out the spot. It's, you know, one of the best arenas in the league.
That's right. Go visit Greg. Greg's a great guy. I met him last year at the Barracuda games, and he's a fun guy to be around. So go hang out with him at the Valley View Casino Center. and then watch the Barracuda win. Now, meanwhile, I do want to say someone was jerking my chain down here by giving us another dislike before pulling it. I saw that, whoever that was in the chat. Greg, have you been following the other series in the AHL a lot? Or?
Yeah, I have. So another thing I want to quickly correct you on.
Throw it out there.
No, we're on 2-3-2. Doesn't mean everybody's on 2-3-2.
True.
In a series. The way we kind of the league kind of runs around here is, you know, the two teams kind of come up and be like, hey, you know, what's the best way for, you know, us to have a fair series, but also be able to save the most amount of money on our pocket side. Right. So sometimes you do have, you know, the 2-2, 1-1-1 like you do in the NHL. But ours, you know, since we do have to travel 8 hours down, will be run through. But I know I've seen a couple before where, you know, if they're close enough, they'll do the 2-2, 1-1-1 as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's the typically it's 300 miles is the distance that they go. Of course, then you could just be San Diego and Ontario last round where you do the infamous 1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1 series.
That was fun. I wish that was a 7-game series. That could have been interesting. So.
All right. I just got a text from PuckGuy14 himself saying he can call in about the viewing party. So call on in. I'll send you a link. now, Greg, normally, of course, I would be talking about the other Western Conference series here, which is Grand Rapids and Chicago. But the one I find the most intriguing right now is Toronto and Syracuse, which was tied up tonight by the Toronto Marlies. So that series is 2-2 now. But Jake Dotchin suspended for 3 games for basically knocking Frederick Gauthier onto Mars. Did you see that hit? Because that was really bad.
Yeah, it's rough, man. So especially so these guys are actually, I believe, in the same division these days. So they're like us in San Diego as well as Stockton. So the bad blood has, you know, just heated up throughout the season. So with that, these guys are in it, you know, for the long run. So I think the series was 2-0 before that, right?
Sorry, I had to mute myself while I was sending Puck Guy the link to join us. Yeah, the series was 2-0 Syracuse, and it almost became 3-0.
Kind of built the momentum back up. So, you know, Toronto was able to steal that one, and now they're able to come back on this one. I think, you know, don't really let a fire under a team and then, you know, be able to come back through. So I think Syracuse is going to hit. I think these two know each other well enough that it may go down to 7 though.
Yeah, yeah. It almost became a 3-0 series lead for Syracuse. And with a minute and 56 seconds left, down 3-2, the Marlies scored 3 times in 33 seconds to beat the Crunch 5-3. So that was just, I mean, that's why I picked the Marlies in that series.
Really is the come so looking out of it,
the East
moving forward. I think it looks like Puck Guy's coming through. That was like when I looked at the second division, I have them and Hershey jumping forward next, but then when they went down 2-0, I was like, looks like I'm wrong on this one. But
yeah, like, yeah, Kaylee Chris joined us last. What's up?
Stuff.
Yeah. Kaylee Chris joined us earlier in the week and she picked Syracuse. And when they went up 2-0, I was like, oh, that Chris. Oh, but we'll see how that series.
I don't know who's going to win it now. I think Syracuse is also right there, but I also think Toronto's got the momentum going forward. So I think that game 5 going forward is going to be pivotal.
Yeah. Now, Puck Guy, are you able to hear us right now or are you still loading in?
No, I can hear you guys loud and clear. Good evening, guys.
Good evening, Eric. You're joined with Greg Manley this evening, and then, of course, I'm Kevin Lacey, but no one cares about me. Eric, what's up? Tell us about the viewing party.
Hi, guys. Yes, it was a fun night. It's always nice when you go out on a date with a fellow hockey fan, so they suggested it and went, okay, well, might as well. The crowd at Stanley's, really into it and boisterous. They had to turn on more TVs than they expected to.
All right.
But it was a good strong crowd tonight. That even stayed well into into overtime. But yeah, it was great. It was like if you've ever been to a Sharks viewing party, it was like a Barracuda mini version of a Barracuda game. Johnny Root was there, Kaylee was there.
Did they do Awkward Dad Dance Cam?
No Simba Cam. We were making fun of some of the San Diego things, like Shake Cam, where you're supposed to shake. Apparently, you start shaking your baby like crazy, which I don't think that's a good promotion, personally. But they had a bunch of giveaways. They were giving out hats, car items, lanyards, playoff tickets. They even had I don't know if it was a game worn or not, but they had the jersey signed by Barclay Goodrow and Mirko Mueller they gave out tonight, which was really cool. But yeah, the place was great. Got into the whole chance and all that fun stuff. Had a blast.
All I want to know is, did John Root ask them to make some noise?
they absolutely did. Unfortunately, because there are so many speakers inside Stanley, the feedback was pretty crazy. And unfortunately for somehow, I don't know how it happened, but for some reason, when Johnny would talk, he was fine. But then when Kaylee got on there, the feedback came in. So I felt bad for her because here she is trying to kind of go back and forth with Johnny, but for some reason it kept getting the feedback on her part. But nonetheless, it was a great night, fun time all the way around. And man, come back three times, especially with O'Regan with a minute left to go, and then a sweet move by Timo Meier. And you can look it up on my Twitter at PuckGuy14. I predicted it in the Butchie Gross Overtime Challenge.
Nice.
Don't know if I'm going to get a shirt or not, but we'll see. But you can look it up on there. But yeah, that was a fun night. It was a great, great night overall. And I'm driving home a happy man.
That's awesome. Did they say that there will be future viewing parties? Have they made any kind of announcement about that?
However, they did announce that they will show the game at Stanley's for game 4 and 5.
Okay.
So if you want to go down there, you absolutely can. And they'll accommodate whatever they can to help out. They made it say it's a home away from home for the Barracuda.
Nice, nice. And I'm hearing that Greg, go ahead.
I spoke to Kaylee, I think it was game one of this series, and she said that she was possibly looking to go down this weekend as well.
Nice.
So I feel that's probably what's going on over there, is that, we may not have the personnel because we all may be down south, but I think they'll still be playing the game down there at Stanley's.
Man, I picked the wrong weekend to go to San Diego, guys.
Right? No kidding. I want to go down to San Diego. But shoot. Yeah, Kaylee does work down at a TV station down there in San Diego, too. So,
right.
So, four things. She's going to probably go back and forth with that during the weekend. But, I can't wait to see the contingency of Teal down in San Diego. It looks like it's going to be a good amount.
Yeah. Yeah, Eric, we'll let you go because I know you're on the road, but thank you for calling in. And for any of you who are going to check out future Barracuda games at Stanley's, be sure to wear your Teal Town USA t-shirt. Get them at Bring Hockey Back. And as Lady Dragonborn said in the chat, turn up in teal. Thanks, Eric.
Absolutely. Hey, Kevin, great job tonight as always.
Thank you. I appreciate it. So we'll see you again here soon, Puck Guy.
Yeah. Take care, Greg. Have a good one.
Yeah. So actually on that Timo goal, I think it came up to me when he said it. Thank God he didn't shoot far side left. So after that game-tying goal against Stockton there in Game 5, it seemed like all he was doing is trying to shoot it out to the side there.
Okay.
So this kid, as you said, you know, was able to push and power his way into the goal.
Absolutely.
That's what he can pick anything apart because he's that good. So being him, I think I'm proud to see that he's, you know, not just utilizing, you know, what worked for him once and try to do that, you know, 1,000 times before he tries something else. But being able to, you know, work on the fly and, you know, push what he thinks would be the way to make sure that that goal goes in.
Yeah, yeah. And a guy of his stature, his size and his stature, we want to see this guy bulldoze people. And at the start of the year, Timo Meier, back on the former Pucknology writers room, we were always talking about Timo Meier doesn't shy away from the play, but he was finding himself in trouble in the penalty box a lot. Well, and he's over the course of the year, it's been nice to see him continue to play his strong physical game, but do it in a way that's legal.
He had a target on his back from day one. Who did we play opening night? I can't remember.
I don't know. I was
on my schedule. But I remember I was sitting there and I literally watched this kid just get trucked like 8 times in the zone. And it was like, wow. And then it just happened every game after game. I think, you know, he finally got, had enough of it where it's a different league than what he was playing with Halifax. So, you know, being able to jump back through, I think he wanted to push his buttons a little bit more to see how much he could get away with on the power side. And that's, I think, you know, that learning curve going forward. And that's the beauty of the AHL.
Yeah. Yeah. Timo Meier has been so strong. I think that, you know, his shuttle, by the way, I'm showing you guys who are watching on YouTube right now. This is Alicia Morris showing off her Teal Town USA t-shirt earlier today. So that's pretty awesome. Timo Meier, he shuttled a lot this year, and I didn't know if that was really beneficial for him, especially after missing most of training camp with what we called teamonucleosis. That playoff performance against Edmonton has rubbed him off in the has rubbed him the absolute right way. And he's just maintaining it in the playoffs. I love how he's playing right now. So just wrapping up the other series here real quick. Chicago is getting decimated by the Grand Rapids Griffins. It's 3-1 right now. That series won't resume until Saturday because Allstate Arena has about a million events booked at it, but I think the Wolves kind of need some time off. Have you been following that series, Greg?
Yeah, it's over. I think, you know, it's just not there for them. So I think Grand Rapids is too much of a powerhouse in that division. It's shown it all year.
Yeah.
And they're not letting up. The benefit of that is I think we murdered them both times we played them this season. So that's okay. But like I said, you know, I think, like I said, Grand Rapids knows their division. They've been in it for so long and they know the guys they play against and they run through, which is saying a lot. Man, for a team that's gone to the playoffs for 25 years straight, to see a team that has that much stacked up in their backyard, I think they're doing the right thing.
Great call. Great call. Yeah. Grand Rapids has been a favorite of myself and Ian Reed, who normally hosts this show. Grand Rapids has been strong. They've been our pick to face the Barracuda in the conference finals. Of course, we still have to get that far, but 2 wins so far for the Barracuda, 3 wins for Grand Rapids. So we're well on our way there. The final series in the AHL left are the Providence Bruins and Hershey Bears. That's 1-1. I did not actually catch when the next game is there. You're not a big Providence Bruins fan, right?
I am not whatsoever. But for that being said, I'm neither about Hershey as well.
Oh, okay.
Going back to Grand Rapids before I jump to the next thing, Matt Lerito, Brown player. I thought he was phenomenal from the second he played.
Oh, yeah.
And he's showing it down in the AHL. I was hoping he'd get the call up, especially with a bad Detroit year.
He got called up for the last game of the season, but, you know, I know what you mean.
Doesn't count.
I know.
So Providence Hershey's actually starts again tomorrow. And it looks like it is at the Dunk. So it's going to be over in Providence. The way it runs through, so I'm not a Bruins fan, but if anybody knows the AHL well enough, the Hershey Bears are the AHL. They're the Dallas Cowboys. Yankees of the AHL. The cool thing that they do there, since they're independently owned, is they bring in people on their own contracts. So though they do have, you know, a couple of guys from Washington who, you know, they, once again, they've also been a powerhouse in the last 15 years that are AHL lifers. So I think they have Casey Wellman, Tim Kennedy, who played for the Sharks for a long time.
Casey Wellman, Pleasanton native, if I recall, too. Good point. Sorry, I didn't mean
so to. So they literally were guys who were throwing in, you know, 30 goals a season left and right. And that's just how they play. And once again, like, you know, like San Diego, like Ontario, those guys pull in 13,000-15,000 people, you know, a game.
Yeah.
Where Providence is the other way around, it brings in about 8,000 as well a game. I used to live out there, people. I know. I used to travel all these. So if you're wondering where I get my info is, it's, you know, from personal, you know, first-hand experiences. The difference is, you know, the Bears fans are actually AHL fans, where group sales side on the Providence side. So it's just a bunch of kids with, you know, a Bruins product there. But going on the hockey side with no, you know, fanship aside here, Providence, wow, I couldn't believe they beat Wilkes-Barre Scranton.
Oh my goodness, I know.
Which is why I still think the Hershey Bears have it, because they're stacked along the way.
Well, they go as the Bruins go as far as Zane McIntyre goes, in my opinion, because Zane McIntyre, very hot and cold goalie, but he got hot obviously at the right time. But I don't know, I'm still not a believer in their goaltending.
So I don't know, I think Zane's the right guy over there. I mean, even being from, you know, those Western Sharks days, in my background here, you know, Providence has the team. They have the grit. I think they're actually, you know, just like their parent team, where, as you saw tonight, you know, sometimes penalties don't get called too often, and that's going to benefit these bruising teams like the Providence Bruins. So they're going to stick around. So I'm going to go Hershey in six here. But I don't think it's going to be easy on each end, especially showing how Providence stuck around and then snuck it by in that fifth game. That shows that anything can happen down here.
Yeah, and even though I do like Hershey in that series, and I believe I also picked them in six, Hershey got into the playoffs on the last day of the season, if I recall. So it's not like Hershey should just cakewalk the Bruins there.
So, well, the thing is, that whole entire Eastern Conference, man, I couldn't tell you who's going to really pull it. I'm calling Hershey to pull out of it after the end of it. Just looking at these teams right now and the way that Toronto and Syracuse are going to kill each other.
Yeah.
I'm picking Syracuse in that one, by the way.
Okay.
Toronto, but I'm picking Syracuse. I think they've got, once again, as Providence does, they have the bruiser in the back there. So I think, you know, they're going to, you know, resiliency against especially a third-string goalie. In Toronto.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That was something I meant to bring up in that Syracuse-Toronto series, is they are on Kazimir Kaskisuo to tend the net, because Garrett Sparks got injured and they lost all faith in Antoine Bibeau. So it's up to Kaskisuo to win him more than just the one series. He's going to have to lead the charge the rest of the way. So good call there, Greg. Now, that's our AHL – well, actually, no, that's not our AHL wrap, because you mentioned that the Hershey Bears are independently owned, and one of the topics that I've repeatedly brought up here on Barracuda After Dark and on Pucknology Writers Room previously was the Vegas Golden Knights American Hockey League affiliate, and the Chicago Wolves are also independently owned, and the hot rumor for a while has been that – Vegas is going to be with the Wolves next season, basically fact, and it's just a matter of waiting for the Wolves to be eliminated by the Griffins. However, now George McPhee came out and said, we might be sharing an affiliate. So have you heard anything? Do you think this Wolves thing is still going to happen? Are they going to share with the Blues? Is there another option out there?
Were to go to the Wolves, is St. Louis getting the boot out?
But see, that was my understanding originally, was that St. Louis was looking at Kansas City as an option, and then it fell through, and then it got back on the table. But now George McPhee saying, we're sharing an affiliate next year. I still think Chicago. The Blues don't seem like a team that would have. If anyone would share an affiliate, I would think it would be Colorado, because they have almost no prospects. They filled the Rampage with a bunch of ECHL guys, which we'll get to in a minute. I don't know. I don't think that the Wolves being shared by the Blues and the Knights is a great option, but that might be what happens. I don't know.
That's the other thing. So you got Colorado and San Antonio. San Antonio is owned by the Spurs. That's a whole different, you know, animal in itself.
Right.
So what do you want to battle with? You know, a guy, you know, who owns his own team? Which I think you could probably benefit from if you're an owner of an AHL and you got two teams, you know, dumping players and money into your own. I think that's where the benefit is. And I don't think Hershey's taken that. So I think, you know, Chicago is probably the best way to go for it, and not an NBA team. So
Well, we all know what happened. Well, those of you watching may not know, but Greg and I know what happened with Houston and that debacle as far as NBA ownership goes. Let's roll our eyes together.
What a really good dude! That crowd was phenomenal in Houston, Texas.
Yeah,
team was phenomenal for the longest time, but as you said, you know, see what happens with an NBA team. Even look at what Cleveland's been doing, you know, flipping over from, you know, the Lake Erie side and just making it pretty much like the Cavaliers, but on ice. So it's a different game all the way around. So, but yeah, back to, you know, good old George. I think Chicago is the right end. I would love to see Kansas City. I think, you know, the scouts would be a great, you know, throwback in there. And I think Kansas City deserves it. And honestly, I think it works perfectly within, you know, a city and the alignment that they're trying to make up now here between the AHL and the NHL.
Right. Right. Exactly. And for those of you listening or watching who don't know about the whole Les Alexander Houston thing I just mentioned, check out the Las Vegas Review Journal. They've got some articles. Just look up Houston Arrows or Les Alexander or both. You'll find it. That's some kind of appalling info there. But yeah, it might be Kansas City for the Blues. I hope so, Greg. And then we'll see what happens with the Golden Knights. But again, the saga goes on. Speaking of the Rampage, because we mentioned Colorado, the Rampage. The Allen Americans, the Sharks affiliate, who had won four consecutive championships in the Central Hockey League and then the ECHL, lost a playoff series last night, folks. And they lost it to the Colorado Eagles, who are the Avalanche's ECHL affiliate. I know you have an astonishingly immense amount of info about the ECHL, Greg, way more than I do. So I just want to brush over it quickly. But I mean, four consecutive titles for the Allen Americans and Steve Martinson, man, how does this guy, I mean, is he a guy, he's the coach of the Americans, folks. And how does this guy not get promoted somewhere?
Well, it's the same reason of why our guy hasn't been promoted. He's too good at what he does. And he likes what he does. So it's, you know, it's a different round through. So I know, especially, you know, even back in Worcester. So I used to witness this team that we know are leading the, you know, Western Conference here. I used to witness this team not go to the playoffs consistently, people. But, you know, on the back end, you know, he's really good at what he does, which is build players up to be the best of what they can be. So you got AA system like the ECHL, you got a team that's consistently winning 4 years in a row and, you know, threatened to go five. That's showing, hey, no matter who you can pull together, it's the Bill Belichick of the ECHL over there. You could, guys can pull a bunch of, you know, stringers from anywhere, and he's going to make it work. So that just shows who he is as a coach. And, you know, I think the organization from, you know, top to bottom has appreciated what he's done.
Absolutely.
And look, you know, look at the benefit of where it is here now on the Barracuda side. So 4 years straight has slowly built this team up into something that's really good now.
Yeah.
Between not making the playoffs for 5 to 6 years on the and then finally making it on their last year and then making the playoffs again, which a back to back, which didn't happen ever in Worcester. I think they had, you know, maybe once, maybe twice in their whole entire system down there.
Hmm.
And that so the back to back playoffs, and then now we're, you know, in our third playoff straight here, but we're also the best in the league. So it just shows what that ladder is going with. So not to build that confidence up on the Sharks fan side, but hey, the bright side is coming for the Sharks. It may not seem like it, you know, by watching them immediately, but it is coming up. So don't fret there.
Yeah. Building up from the bottom up, basically. I mean, this is how teams should be built. I mean, the Allen Americans had a nice ride. I mean, the jump from AA to the ECHL to AAA, which is the AHL, is a lot of it's a lot bigger jump than the AHL to the NHL, which is still a big jump in itself. But still winning 4 consecutive titles in the ECHL, now having a chance at a Calder Cup here with the AHL. The Sharks went to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. There is going to be turnover here this offseason, but still, the future is bright for the Sharks, folks. So I know that when we got into the trenches in March and April, things got really ugly for the Sharks, for the Sharks fans. It got very frustrating, but we're moving upward, folks. So, you know, remain positive. We're all right. The kids are all right, as they say. So
it's definitely a different game. So I think the biggest thing is, you know, we wanted those immediate, you know, pushes like we did with Joe Thornton.
Oh, of course.
We got those for a long time. The Danny Heatley trade, areas in that matter where, you know, we got those immediate players, but that killed our system. For the longest time, you know, nothing was there. And then, you know, a few years ago, they decided, hey, doing it this way. And it's working from the ground up. We're in the middle stage here moving forward. So I think, you know, I'd love to talk about the ECHL all day, which I definitely will at some point, probably in the offseason after we win this cup.
Nice.
We can talk about that. Second segue, you know, to a couple Sharks news that we have.
So as far as prospects go, we already talked about Manny Veder signing a 3-year entry-level deal with the Sharks. He had 29 goals and 24 assists in 60 games between Moncton and Rouyn-Noranda in the QMJHL. 10 points in 12 playoff games as well. He's a guy that we really liked in training camp. Seems like a really heady player, really smart player. He was an overage draft pick, but someone that Zach, Ian, and I all really think can be a quality lower line player. And sure, lower line player isn't sexy, but hey, they're not all going to be sexy picks, guys. So and then the other signing was Colby McCauley, who is another guy that we've raved about in recent weeks. I don't know if I liked his game tonight per se, but he just signed a 2-year AHL deal, so he's off of the pro tryout or the amateur tryout, and he's got a deal. Did you see McCauley play much, Greg?
Yeah, so it's 50-50 here with me. So okay. McCauley, I think the last, you know, what, 10 games of the season, I was so impressed by this kid.
Yeah. Just
the way he played. The second he got started getting scratched in these Stockton games, I was just sitting there being like, man, why?
Yeah.
Why is this? But, you know, so it worked out. And I was, you know, then it jumped into, hey, you know, let's not, you know, break something that isn't broken or fix something that isn't broken there. And then he goes in tonight and it's like, oh, okay, that's why, you know, you're not playing,
right.
Playing too often.
Well, the kid's 20, if I recall, 20 years old. So,
yeah. But I do like him. I just don't think San Diego's the right team to put him against. As I said, you know, way earlier in the show, it's a bruiser team down that way, man. Like, I mean, Shea Theodore is not there right now, but the way that defense plays, they're gonna pick you apart if you're sitting in the zone, which he does. That's the way he plays out instead of going on the rush.
Right.
That's what, you know, I think the downfall of him is. The kid is good fast, but he's just a little bit too small against, you know, a strong and heavy team like San Diego.
Right. He reminded me a lot of Garnet Hathaway of Stockton, and he's this little guy who just doesn't care and just he's going to go and hit anybody he could and then go on the offensive rush the other way. So the bigger bodies on San Diego, that is a bit of an issue, but. And Kelsey mentioned in the chat, there are a bunch of comments in the chat. I'm trying to get to you guys, folks. Thank you for commenting. I appreciate it. Kelsey said she thinks that he got benched in the third period, and I do think that's correct. There is some other Sharks news. Hat tip to my friend Cisco. Saw Joe Thornton yesterday. Joe Thornton, of course, had knee surgery to repair that torn ACL and MCL. Apparently, he's already off crutches. He's limping like crazy from what I heard, but the guy's already off crutches. So, Greg, do you think we're going to see him at the start of the season? Well, of course, he's got to get re-signed by the Sharks, but I think that's a no-brainer, or at least a mostly no-brainer. But does he make it to opening night?
So, first things first, yes, it's a no-brainer, sign Joe Thornton. I think, you know, I think him and Marlowe both deserve to come back. Yep. I think they don't deserve the money that they were getting paid. But bring them back, you know, at a lower cost, and I think we can benefit from that by bringing somebody else in to help bulk up, you know, that scoring offense. That is what we're missing over, you know, this past year. So if he does get signed, I believe he'll play opening night. I think
Beast.
They know the right thing of one. Yeah, he's a monster. This guy, what, missed maybe before this injury, missed what?
I think it was like
four games.
Yeah, I think it was like six games in his career.
Yeah, it was. So this guy knows what he needs to do, especially at this age. I think he knows where he can take it slow. And, man, it's what, May? So you got months going forward here.
So
he'll skate. I would say late September. I don't see him doing the preseason games, maybe the one or two at the end there.
Yeah,
but after that, I think he'll play opening night. But I think Joe Thornton at this point, especially as you saw this through, it depends if we need him or not. So I think, you know, if he feels that he's ready, you know, come around October 9th, 10th, whenever that, you know, our opening night is again.
Yeah.
They're ready to play. But if he feels, hey, you know, maybe if I come back, you know, in a month, I'll be 10 times better than what I'm going to be. I think he knows the right decision where he can get the best out of himself.
Yeah. I think that, you know, when I hear torn ACL, it just makes me cringe. And that is an injury that I hear 5 months recovery. Yeah, right. Like, no chance. But then when I'm hearing Joe Thornton is already off crutches and walking around, I'm like, man,
yeah,
the guy is just in beastly shape. He might pull it off. He might. I don't know. So
he's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just going to go through just kind of quick fire these last few notes, because I try to shoot for 45-minute shows, folks, and I do thank you all for sticking around. The viewership has held ground this whole show, and, of course, we're over an hour already, so I just want to quick fire this. Ilya Kovalchuk wants to come back to the NHL. Oh, dear. Here we go again. But I guess this time it seems like it's a legit thing, more than just a rumor that came out of a Russian newspaper. Do you want Kovalchuk back?
Yes. But it's still, he's going to go to, you know, I mean, the New Jersey has him. So imagine him, they're picking up first, it's going to come through. So I think, yes, I want Kovalchuk back, mainly because after seeing that goal against Johnny Quick and that shootout in the Olympics, I was like, okay, yeah, this kid's good.
He can still, he can still hang at 35.
But no, he's nasty. And I, once again, I think we need a bit more superstars. And Kolbachuk is one of those guys that can carry a team.
Yeah. Speaking of the Russian factor, Vadim Shipachev. Oh, man, I knew I was going to mess that up because I always want to call him Shipachev. It's Vadim Shipachev. Signed with the Vegas Golden Knights, and we'll talk about this later on in the summer when we get to the expansion draft and everything like that. But my quick thought on Shipachev is the Golden Knights were going to lack a center big time when it came to the expansion draft because it would be built on defense and built on goaltending. But man, what a coup! I mean, this is a guy who the Montreal Canadiens fans thought was a shoe-in to sign with them last offseason, and it didn't happen. He stayed in the KHL, and now Vegas gets Shipachev. So well done, George McPhee. And then Ben Bishop was traded to Dallas. Did they finally get their goaltender? Or, I mean, is Bishop going to stick around with Dallas, or is he going to test the market still? I know they need goaltend.
I'm going yes, 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 and yes, he's going to Dallas. If I'm correct, the Dallas Stars are – I was going to call them the Cowboys for a second. You might as well at this point. They're paying $10 million a year for their goaltending, and they have two of them. Ugh. And they suck.
Yeah, I think they're both out of the league for good.
So I think Ben Bishop going to them is going to stay. One, because he could probably get paid $6 to $7 million a year and still have, you know, because that'll be cheaper than what they're doing right now with these two goaltenders.
Yeah.
And then from there, I think they're paid for them. I think that fourth round draft pick, I think LA could have either gotten a two or a three off of them because Dallas.
Look at what they gave up for him to not make the playoffs.
Yeah. and then they turned around and got the fourth round. So I think, you know, they could have gotten a lot more for him back in return as well. So I think that the way it is. Thanks, LA. Please keep killing yourselves on the on the trade deadlines that way. But seriously, I think Ben Bishop to Dallas, it's gonna stay. He's exactly what they need.
Yeah, definitely. The goaltending is the thing that we've been laughing about for a couple of years now for Dallas. And so at least look at basically every other team. You got to build from your goalie out in this era for sure. So I don't know if trading off Budaj was so stupid, Lady Bragginboard in the chat. Not entirely sure, but I mean, he was working out really well for the Kings.
Peter Budaj is hit and miss. So he was really – I thought he was a solid backup to Carey Price up in Montreal.
Too. Yeah.
And then I saw him in the – and he played for St. John's. He could let up six goals against anybody he played against.
You think he was just disinterested or
– Maybe. Maybe it was the travel that he had to travel, you know, 8 hours to each game he had to play. From there, it was just, you know, it just seemed like, oh, wow, this guy is done. And then he went down to L.A. and just murdered everybody left and right. So before he, you know, falls off the cliff again, you might as well get your money for him, trading him off when you can, especially when you have Jonathan Quick, who is young and still good no matter what he does. So,
yeah, definitely there. Lady, following up on my Budaj thing, I like Budaj. I think he's a solid goalie. I just don't see him being a number one. As you mentioned, Greg, he's a backup.
He's not a number one at all.
And he is an unrestricted free agent after, well, now, essentially. So I don't think that LA really lost that much in him. I just think that giving up I believe they gave up a third round pick and a prospect and Budaj for Bishop, and then didn't make the playoffs, like, womp, womp. This is why Dean Lombardi got fired, among other reasons. But I want to wrap things up here. Thank you all for watching again. I know Mike Jones wants to – oh, by the way, Mike Jones, who? I know that Mike Jones wants us to stick around for a bit, and I'd love to, but it's almost midnight, and we've still got Game 4 and Game 5 to go win and talk some more Barracuda. Greg, where can we find you at on social media? And then, of course, we're going to look for you in San Diego Game 5, right?
Yeah, so before I plug out my own Twitter, follow SJ Barracuda on Snapchat. It's not me. but good behind the scenes, I believe, you know, just the way the team's rolling these days. So Twitterless Greg is actually my Twitter handle. I talk just about everything and run through. Always appreciate, you know, follows and feedback. So it's the E in there because I couldn't actually put the name in there. So it's T-W-I-T R-L-E-S-S and then Greg. So if you want to write that out in those comments, Kevin, go right ahead.
I've already. So it's Twitterless, but without an E? Without the first E?
So without the first E and a T there, because Twitter wouldn't let me do it. So so the long joke of that is I didn't have Twitter for a long time because I still don't believe in it sometimes. Okay. And my friends would always try to tweet at me, but they couldn't. This Greg came up.
Oh, gotcha. All right. Twitterless Greg, we gotcha. Well, you know, you've been a blast to have on. I definitely want to have you back on the show.
Yeah. I know Friday night I'm traveling down to San Diego. So if you guys are, you know, in San Diego at like 2 a.m. on Friday, maybe you can find me. But if not, you could probably find me at SeaWorld, the zoo, the beach, anything around there, you know, during the day. But also, like I said, I'll be around all the events there. Saturday night, I believe. Let me just double check my ticket ends for anybody that is there who wants to stop by.
Sorry. While you do that, I'm just going to say go visit the Gas Lamp Tavern because that's where I was a couple weeks ago. It's a Blackhawks-centric bar, and I was there watching the Predators eliminate the Blackhawks from the playoffs, and it was awesome. And then go upstairs to, I can't remember what, the Quad Ale House. That's where the real great food, great beer happens. But go make fun of the Blackhawks at the Gas Lamp Tavern in San Diego, and then go get some good
beer. Make fun of the Blackhawks, do it. Section 19, row 3, I'm behind the net. So right there for you guys, per usual. And then usually find me at 109 on the SAP Center side.
Nice.
So, if this is going to go to game 6, happy to do that. And, you know, happy to even, you know, try to do this, you know, possibly live, you know, after that game going forward.
Well, thanks again for joining us, Greg. This has been Barracuda After Dark. I'm Kevin Lacey, 22. I should probably throw my new lower third back up there. Way to go, Google. Mike Jones, just answering your question here. These cards in behind me are from the former Sharks Fest that we used to have every year. So one most visible is the 1995-96 San Jose Sharks. The autographs are number 2, Jim Kite. Oh, nice jersey, Greg. There you go.
Thanks.
Number 2, Jim Kite, SJ Sharkey. Number 30, Chris Terreri. Number 31, Wade Flaherty. Number 33, Marcus Ragnarsson. Yeah. Let's see. We got number 39, Jeff Friesen. And number 42, Sean Donovan. I'm at Kevin Lacey, 22. And I do want to leave you guys with one thing. But in the meantime, I do want to just pay my respects to Kathy Berman, who is Chris Berman's wife. She passed away in a tragic auto accident this morning. So I do just want to say, you know, my condolences on behalf of Teal Town USA. Chris Berman, of course, is, you know, most known for football and baseball, but the guy can hold his own on a hockey broadcast as well. So, you know,
yeah, no, it's probably on ESPN.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So let me leave you with this image. This is the final image from the Valley View Casino Center. You know, the San Diego Goals, they are on their flight to the Cup, except that flight will be delayed, folks, because the San Jose Barracuda won 4-3 in overtime. Thank you, Timo Meyer. It's Timo time. Good night, everybody.